Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we head west to chat with Bear Left, and we talk to Cached about the geocaching game River Deep, Mountain High. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to the spooky number 13 edition of GeoTalk. Thanks for joining me once again. Thank you also to all the excellent, positive and great feedback that I've received over the last week for the GeoTalk video edition. It seemed a lot of people enjoyed number 3. If you haven't checked it out, you can visit the YouTube site, which is youtube.com/GeoTalk, and you can see the video there, or you can actually download it if you've subscribed to the GeoTalk feed. It's a file that will work on iTunes, no matter what platform you've got, if you can run iTunes, or it will work in your iPod as well. Otherwise, if you don't have iTunes, go to the YouTube site and check it out. But anyway, thanks very much for all the positive feedback on that. So on to geocaching. I hope that you've had some successful finds and not too many DNFs over the last couple of weeks. One of the things that I've been trying out over the last week or two is participating in this geocaching game called River Deep, Mountain High. Now, I'm going to speak to Sam, also known as Cached, a little bit later on in the podcast to find out a bit more about it. The interesting thing is you don't have to be in Australia to participate in this game. You can be from any country around the world, but the game is run by a group of Australian geocachers. And it's to try and get you to do maybe some caches that you might not normally do. So if you normally just do urban caches, this will get you out into the bush. If you prefer the bush caches, then you're going to maybe do a few micros. It also, one of the requirements is to go geocaching with someone that you've never gone geocaching with before. So it's also about creating a sense of community or getting you more community involved. So we'll look at that a little bit later on. If you want to check out the website, I'll give you a link in the show notes, but it's www.cachinggames.com/RDMH, River Deep Mountain High. Over the past couple of weeks, I've been getting emails with suggestions for different topics in this podcast, and that's been really great. And I'm going to try and cover all of them, but some of them I found are a little bit difficult to do as a monologue, which is me talking away. So what I'm going to try and do over the next couple of weeks is get a few groups together where we discuss some of these topics. Now, some of the ones that have come up are things such as travel bugs and geocoins, making sure that you move them on and what to do if yours goes missing. Another one is about maintenance of caches. Now, I know that there are a number of geocaches out there that are no longer loved and are just sort of sitting rotting away. What do you do when you come across one that hasn't been looked after? And also the topic of waymarking, which I've promised that we will explore in a future episode. And I know there are a couple of people in Australia that are slowly getting interested in the area of waymarking, and we'll look at that topic very soon. Another program that I promised we would cover is Earth Caches. Now, I've been in touch with the creator of Earth Caches, an old friend of mine, Gio Aware, and he's promised me that we will line up an interview in the next few weeks. So we'll look at that topic, the history of it, how he came about developing it, and why they are in geocaching.com. So if you've got any questions about that, send them in. One last thing before we get into the program. This podcast relies on the geocaching community to come up with ideas, and that's been great. And as I mentioned, there's a couple of topics that we're going to explore. But if you've got some commentary that you want to record, why not grab an audio device? It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a mobile phone with an audio recorder. It could be an old tape deck, even a microphone into your PC. Record away any topic that you want to discuss and send it in, and we'll try and put it into GeoTalk. I know that there have been a couple of people that have contributed and we've put those in, even got a video which you'll see in the next video edition of GeoTalk. So any ideas, send them in to geotalk@mac.com and happy to incorporate it. And of course, you're all waiting for the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode. Here we go, fairly simple one for you. Which month had the most geocaches hidden in Australia? See if you can work it out. Answer at the end of the podcast.
Geocacher profile.
On GeoTalk this time, we welcome someone from Western Australia. It's good to have someone from the other side of the country. It's Ian, also known as Bear Left or Papa Bear Left. How are you going, Ian?
Not too bad, and I would take issue that this is this side of the country. You're on the other side of the country.
All right, I'm not going to get into a debate about it because people outside the country might not understand what the heck we're talking about. But Ian, thanks for coming on board, and tell us first of all, how did you come across your geocaching name?
That was a deliberate choice. We came across geocaching when via a chap in the Palm Users Group, the Palm PDAs. It took us out. We were immediately hooked, and we realised, of course, to log the caches we'd gone out to find, we needed a name. And I've always been fond of polar bears. In fact, I was born on International Polar Bear Day, although it wasn't back in those days. And so bears was going to be part of it, probably, and then Bear Left just seemed to be an appropriate sort of punning name.
So how did the left bit come into it?
Oh, just we had to go either left or right.
Makes sense.
and Bear Left is also the punchline of another joke of we went to see the bears, but there was a sign saying on the road, they're going there, saying Bear Left, so we went away.
Ah, I see. How long have you been geocaching for?
Almost forever. We started in, I think it was 2001 from memory. Might have been later than that anyway. I'd have to have a look now. Gosh, it seems so long ago. That was in Sydney, and we did our first 50 or 60 caches in Sydney before we moved to New Zealand into Christchurch, and then we went cache mad there and did everything in the South Island almost, and then a couple of years ago moved to Perth because we ran out of caches in New Zealand.
Do you find any significant difference between caches in Australia and New Zealand, or for that matter, Sydney, New Zealand, and even Perth?
We did initially. Sydney, we've always been rather fond of puzzle and mega multi caches, and some of our most memorable megas were in Sydney. And so, of course, because that's where we started, we thought this was normal. And when we went to Christchurch, we were, people have said we changed the scene there somewhat, because before that, because New Zealand is full of natural beauty, and there was caches tended to be either traditionals in lovely spots or multis that took you to several lovely spots in a row, but there really weren't many puzzles or camouflaged cunning hides and that sort of thing. So when we started doing those, it was a bit of a shake-up to the locals, and the few people took the thrown down gauntlet and picked it up and whacked us across the face with it well and truly. And we very soon found ourselves having lots of mystery and puzzle caches to go and find ourselves. So Perth is unusual. There are a few quite good mystery and puzzles, but mostly they're either standard suburban, although in quite nice places, or out in the bush under a grass tree or under a big rock, because they're really the only reliable places to hide something. So there's a lot of four-wheel drive type caches. The geography lends itself to, if you look on Google Earth, you'll see a long, thin line of caches, because there's the Darling Escarpment, which is basically where the beach that Earth is built on starts. And that's where the views are. And they're the only hills. And it was a bit strange when we got here, because we live up in the hills, almost as high as you can get near Perth, and it's all of 300 metres above sea level. But the locals wonder how we managed to live here without getting a bit of oxygen deprivation and blood noses. So that was a bit of a culture shock after New Zealand.
I mean, caching in New Zealand's quite unique, I found. I mean, apart from the fact that you don't have to worry about spiders and snakes, I mean, the only thing you have to worry about are sand flies. The views in New Zealand are just spectacular, and you don't seem to have as much trouble finding a good place to put a cache in that country.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will fill up, but there are still large areas once you get out of the cities. Christchurch is getting a bit crowded as far as caches go, and the Port Hills there have the same sort of effect, that there is a line where you get a nice view of Christchurch City, and that's getting acacia every couple of hundred metres is being approached. But, yeah, apart from that, there's so many mountains and braided rivers and, you know, green hills that it's, as you say, it's quite easy still to find gorgeous places that people haven't been to.
Well, I think we should get a tip there from the New Zealand Tourist Commission for that little plug for geocaching over in the Shaky Isles. Now, tell me a bit about what would be, say, your favourite geocache or favourite find.
Well, as I say, the mega multis are the ones that sort of stick in the mind. Probably the most significant and certainly caused some obsessive behaviour was Pilatus Parts 1, 2 and 3. It's now just a traditional cache, but when it started off, it was a massive undertaking. Three caches, but they were linked together. They just split it up a bit to make it a bit slightly less daunting. At least you got three smileys for all this effort. And it started off in Abbotsford, and then Bronte, and then Clove Valley, and then Diamond Bay. And we started thinking, that's A, B, C, D, oh my God. And sure enough, with the exception of X, which the only place I can think of was King's Cross, and that's not a nice place to be hiding caches, it went right through to Z. It ended up in Zealand, and which would have been interesting enough in and of itself, but every waypoint was a cunning hide and also a cipher. Every one of them was different. And so that took us about 40 hours over two weekends of pretty intensive caching until late at night and all over the city, and we were eventually the first ones to find that, and that was a proud moment and a feeling of pride and also of relief, because then we could stop searching for Pilatus caches.
So do I get the feeling that for you the ideal cache is one that involves a little bit of brain power and a bit of thinking, maybe even back at home?
I kind of prefer the puzzles in the field, only because you get more of the sort of puzzle that has the aha moment rather than the hard slog or the Google it or whatever. The ones that are home, if it's just code breaking, I find that less interesting. You can make a code arbitrarily difficult. You know, if you make cache coordinates and encode it with AES and triple DES and all the things that the spooks can do, you can make it insoluble. But the things that are in the field have to be solved without too much artificial assistance, and I tend to find those more fun.
There you go, some challenges for people who want to set some caches for Bear Left. Now, you have another identity, and that is the Ump. Tell us a little bit about the Ump.
Yes, in February last year, I took on the mantle of one of the volunteer reviewers, and had to come up with a new name, and the Ump seemed to be kind of an appropriate one. The avatar I use is of a cricket umpire with his finger in the air saying you're out, but with a polar bear head replacing it. Unfortunately, the Americans think that he's the disco bear, because as far as they're concerned, it looks like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. They don't really understand cricket in America. A bit.
I don't think many people understand the dress sense of cricket umpires either.
There is that, yes. So I was trying to look more like sort of Daryl Hare than John Travolta, but it didn't quite come off. But yeah, that's certainly been interesting. It has cut down rather on my caching time. Late last year, I decided that we'd gone for, I think, two consecutive months without a cache find, which was unprecedented and most unwelcome. So I've decided that I enjoy geocaching. I enjoy finding them and placing them. So we've decided that that's not going to happen again. We are going to go and find them. But there is a fair amount of time taken up with the reviewing. There are rewards too. I get to see all of the caches that get placed in Australia on geocaching.com from the inside, as it were. And that's kind of nice. So I now have a much better idea of regional variations. There are a lot of people I know that I've met at events and things whom I feel I know quite well, but have never met before. I like the knowing what goes on behind the scenes. And as far as geocaching.com caches in Australia, what goes on behind the scenes is mostly me.
What do you think has been the most rewarding aspect to come out of geocaching for you and your wife?
I had this conversation with somebody in the office I was working in Christchurch, where we were talking, you know, just sort of, you know, what did you do on the weekend? And I said places we'd been, and they were looking at me going, oh, wow, that's nice. They've lived there all their lives. They were born and bred in Christchurch, and they'd been to Queenstown and to Hamner Springs, sort of tourist places, and maybe to a shack or a batch, as it is there, down the beach. They hadn't been to 1/20th of the places in the South Island that we'd been to in a year or 18 months there. We can fairly honestly say that we have a pretty good idea of the countryside around the South Island. We still have places to go in Perth. We haven't headed up far north, but we know the city of Perth better than most of the locals do. And down the south, southwest of the state, we've seen. We have been places and seen things that ordinary people just don't get to know about. They only ever get to see their local stuff. Our local is everywhere. A classic case was in New Zealand. There's a couple of passes through the mountains on the way to the west coast from the Christchurch side. And one of the locals who works on the West Coast and travels across fairly regularly stopped one day. I didn't say why, but he heard a waterfall in the background. And so he went off and had a look, and there's this gorgeous ferny grotto with a waterfall running down it. No signpost, no other reason to stop there. But now there is, because there's a geocache there, and we've seen it. And people who find that, who said, I must have been through this pass 2,000 times in my life and I never knew this gorgeous place was there. And to me, that's one of the things that you just can't do without. And I have often said that geocaching, it involves gadgets, the internet and bushwalking. If it hadn't already existed, I would have had to invent it.
You say that you've mentioned or you've talked about geocaching to a number of people at work. Have you had many converts over the number of years that you've been doing it?
No, surprisingly few. Some of them have come out and found individual ones, but none of them have really cottoned on. However, certainly other people I've come across, I think, have taken it up, as a few I've seen. My sister, having found her first geocaches a couple of weeks ago, is determined to go and buy a GPS because they travel around a bit anyway and they would now have some other reason to do things while they're there. So I think we have littered a few geocaches behind us over the last few years.
And for someone who's just been getting into geocaching for, say, only a few months, what would be one piece of advice that you would give them?
Don't burn out. The temptation is to go and find every cache within, you know, driving distance, and that's fine. But we had the situation in Christchurch where we'd basically found everything within a couple of hours a drive, and that does get annoying. Pace yourself. There are always more geocaches being placed, but you can find them faster than people are placing them. Find the good ones. You don't have to find everything. You don't have to go and find 20 every day when you go out there and not take the time to stop and look around. So enjoy each cache you find rather than finding more caches just for the sake of finding more of them.
Well, Ian, it's been great talking to you. Thanks very much for spending some time on GeoTalk, and hopefully we'll drag you across to this side of the island one day soon.
I've been across there, and but yeah, I'm looking forward to finding some of these caches that I've published over the last year or so.
Cheers.
See you later.
Well, joining me on the line for GeoTalk is someone who's been on the show before and is back for a second time. It's a cache, also known as Sam from Adelaide. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Darren. How are you?
I'm great. Now, we're going to talk about a geocaching game that's happening in Australia at the moment. This is the second time, I believe, it's happened. It's called River Deep Mountain High. Take us through it.
Yeah, what it is, and it's actually available worldwide. We've got Germans and Americans playing this year as well. It's a way to make your normal everyday caching that little bit more interesting. We've got a list of 30 requirements on the cache site, which is www.cachinggames.com. And of those 30 requirements, people have got until the end of June to find 20 of the 30 requirements. Now, the requirements aren't specific caches per se. They're things that you can do, like find a cache on top of a mountain, find the cache that's got the word view in the title, find a cache that's dog friendly, find one that's wheelchair friendly. And then we've got a scoring system that makes it competitive. And the scoring system is that each requirement's worth 1 or 2 points, and then most of them are worth, on top of that, the difficulty times the terrain. So if you go and do a 5-5 cache, that's going to be worth about 26 points to you.
Now, this has been geared in such a way that those who are, say, prolific or first to finders aren't necessarily going to win, are they?
No, not at all. The way it's worked also is that all the caches that can be used for the game had to have been hidden before the start of the game, so that you can't go out and hide a cache for your mate that's a 5-5 for him to find to get the good points for it. And it's also worked that you've only got 7 days to claim your log, so you can't stack up all your caches and then work out which categories they'll get you the most points for. And first in, best dressed really doesn't do you a whole lot of good, especially when we've got some more requirements to come out mid-game. We'll probably release about another 5 or 6 requirements, and we're fairly tight-lipped on what those requirements will be. So there's no great advantage in getting them all in first, and it's not a race.
Yeah, I only just discovered this morning about having 7 days to log it, and already I've missed out on a couple, so I'm going to have to go back out there and do some more caching to catch up. One of the interesting requirements that I've found is to cache with someone you haven't gone caching with before. What's the thought behind that one?
Well, the idea behind that one is to get people out to meet people that they haven't met. We tend to have our own little group of people that maybe we cache with, or maybe we only cache on our own. And that's actually been quite successful. There's been a few people get out and cache with people that they'd never met before.
Now, another requirement that you've got listed here is for a swaggy. You might have to explain to some people who've never come across the Geocaching Australia website what a swaggy is.
Yeah. Last year when we ran the competition, we had really quite a GCA flavour to it, and we've toned down the GCA flavour this year, but there's a couple of requirements in there that are still very GCA specific, and the swaggy is one of them. Basically, a swaggy is the Geocaching Australia version of a travel bug or a hitchhiker, and they're free. There's no costs in tied up with using a Geocaching Australia swaggy, and so there's no cost to anybody to release one, and there's no cost to anybody to move them or to buy tags or anything to go on them. And most people just do up maybe a laminated tag that says this is a swaggy and this is what you do with it. And, yeah, so they're a free travel bug.
Now, as you mentioned at the start, this competition is open to anyone, and I suppose we should underline that the Geocaching Australia website is open to anyone as well. It's not just for Australians, is it?
Yeah, we've actually seen lately that there's been a few people from overseas have started using the Geocaching Australia site and uploading their own finds to it to use it for the fantastic stats and things that are all set up inside it. So it seems to be getting a broader audience than just Australians lately. Mm.
Now, we should also point out that it's not the person who finishes on top who's going to come out a winner, and there is also a little bit of an incentive to compete, isn't there?
Ah, yes. Now, I neglected to mention the prizes. We've got about a dozen Australian geocoins up for grabs for the competition, and these are a special edition of the 2007 Australian geocoin that Four Ferals has put together. And they're being donated as from the proceeds of the sales of the Australian geocoins. But the coin that is the prize for the competition is a different one to the ones you can buy. These can't be purchased. These are special ones. And they'll be awarded to the first 5 people on the top of the ladder. They'll be awarded to the last person on the ladder that completes the 20 requirements. So there's a real strategy there in actually playing for the lowest value scores that you can possibly get. And that appears to be quite competitive this year. Looking at the ladder, I think there's a few people trying to edge for that bottom spot. And then there's a random coin, and there's also coins for the person that finishes in 10th, 15th, 25th, 35th and 45th. And those people, for those coins, don't even have to have finished the requirements. So just getting in and having a bash can net you a coin.
Now, this is the second year in which you've been running the games, and it's not just yourself. There's a group of people involved. Tell us about who's organised all this and how much time it's taking you to do it all.
Yeah, it originally started last year when Ada Kesh was in Iraq, and we got chatting over MSN and email there for a while, and we decided that there was really a market in Australia for this type of game, and that we'd seen a few that had been done overseas, and we actually thought we could do it better. So we put our heads together and started coming up with the requirements, and Court at Work came on board, and he helped out with the requirements too. But most of all, he's got the website, and he's got the coding skills to make this all come together. And without Court at Work, this would have been dead in the water a long time ago. And then this year we've moved on. Ada Kesh has stepped back because he's tied up with uni studies and all sorts of things at the moment. And Facet Man has stepped in. So this year's team is Court at Work, Facet Man and myself. And it's been a fair bit of work in the background. And we approve every log individually as they come in. So you can imagine that there's a fair bit of work tied up in that. I think I've done about 25 this morning.
So before you go, one last plug. Give us the website address and when the competition is running until.
Yep, the website address is www.kashingames.com. The game started on the 1st of May and ends on the 30th of June, and you can register at any time throughout the game.
And just don't be a dill and leave it for more than 7 days to put your find in.
Yeah, don't forget about the 7-day rule, because that'll start to catch people out if they're joining late.
Well, on behalf of everyone listening, thanks very much for organising the game, and I'm going to start logging my finds this morning, and all the best to everyone who's competing. And thanks very much for joining us, Sam.
Thank you.
Just about all we've got time for in this episode of GeoTalk. Before we go, thanks very much to Bear Left over in Perth and to M-Trax down in Canberra, who have been dropping CDs of GeoTalk episodes into caches. I've been trying to do it myself, but I've found that there aren't a lot of caches around at the moment that are large enough to hold a CD. So if you're going to plant one, maybe you might consider making it big enough for a CD. And if you're going to be looking for caches, maybe burn a few editions of GeoTalk onto a CD and drop it in for someone else to discover this podcast. So thank you very much to those two. And also thank you to all those who chatted last Friday night on the Yabba Chat. I can't remember what the name of it's called. But anyway, Mix is running that. And if you haven't checked it out, go to the forums, forum.geocaching.com.au, and find out all about that. In the next episode of GeoTalk, we're going to speak to Bear Left's alter ego, the Ump. And we're also going to speak to Dugan from Central Queensland. And to finish up this episode of GeoTalk, I've got a song from Sunny and Sandy's Podcasia podcast. You can check out their show at www.podcasher.com and check out their podcast. Congratulations to them too on passing the 100 mark. So there's a whole back catalogue of more than 100 podcasts for you to listen to. Anyway, this song that they've recorded is actually by Geo Cash, apparently the brother of the late Johnny Cash, and the song's called Won't Stop Looking. And until next time, safe geocaching.
I was hiking out with my dog one day. A pretty gal came across my way, and I noticed she had something in her hand. She called that gadget a GPS and explained to me that more or less it was helping her find a hidden ammo can. She asked if I wanted to help her find it. I shrugged and said I guess I didn't mind it. So down the road we went, dog, woman, and man. Well, that there meeting changed my life. I started caching and she became my wife, and we hunted caches together every day. I got fancy night vision infrared glasses. I bought an RV the size of Kansas to hunt down caches no matter where they lay. Now it's a darn good thing I'm rolling in dough, cause I gotta have the gear that lets me go caching anytime, anywhere, night or day. I have traveled all over this earth, collected swag that ain't much worth, been first to find more times than I recall. Every season of the year I've got all my gadgets and gear for winter, spring, summer, or the fall. Searching all the rocks and trees, I even look for LPCs. I won't stop looking until I found them all. Now I got airplanes and sailing ships. I bring a satellite phone on all my trips. I got a hiking stick and a Tilly outdoor hat. I got a Fisher Space pen to sign the log. I got running shoes so I can jog from cache to cache. Now what do you think about that? I'm sure I can quit any time I choose, but not today. I got nothing to lose. Today I'm looking for caches wherever I'm at. Now if you come along with me, my honey and my dog, you'll see some sights you've probably never seen before. And once you've gone a-hunting with us, I guarantee without too much fuss, you'll be hooked and you'll be coming back for more. So grab your GPS and pack, feel the sun on your face and the wind at your back. One step, then another, and soon you're out the door. I have traveled all over this earth, collected swag that ain't much worth, been first to find more times than I recall. Every season of the year, I got all my gadgets and gear for winter, spring, summer, or the fall. Searching all the rocks and trees, I even look for LPCs. I won't stop looking until I found them all. Yeah, let me tell you, looking for caches is a whole lot of fun. I met a whole lot of great people and seen some amazing things. And at the end of the day, before I head for home, I'll relax by, well, looking for some caches. And in the morning, after breakfast, and a lot of times before breakfast, I'll look for some caches. Yep, I've seen amazing things all over the world. Mm-hmm. I have traveled all over this earth, collected swag that ain't much worth, been first to find more times than I recall. Every season of the year, I got all my gadgets and gear for winter, spring, summer, or the fall. Searching all the rocks and trees, I even look for LPCs. I won't stop looking until I found them all. Y'all come over to podcacher.com now, you hear?